Okay, folks, before we start today's show, we want to give a big shout out to our sponsor, Texas Coin. Right now, that Texas coin is sitting right at $3.16, and that's right now on September 10th, 2025. They're hashing right there in the great state of Texas, right out about 400 gigahertz. And I tell you, right now, they have already signed up 23,793 miners. And you'll recall, I signed up about a month ago. There was only 12,000, so it's practically doubled. They're signing up about 350 a day to mine that Texas coin. Hey, if you want to get in on this and learn more about it, just shoot an email to texitmines@gmail.com. That's TEXITMINES@gmail.com. And go ahead and shoot that. Put the word palm in there somewhere, like in the subject line, P-A-L-M, like a palm tree, to get that discount. And we hope you enjoy today's show.
Hello there, and welcome to the Palm and Pine Podcast. The boys are coming to you from their hidden camp, set deep in the Florida woods on the banks of the Mystic Suwannee River. So let's take a moment and hear from the boys of old Florida.
Hey, all right, folks, welcome to the Palm and Pine Podcast. We are glad to be with y'all today. And as usual, I am here right beside Professor Barlow.
Here
Dr. Barlow, good morning, sir. Yeah. How's things going with
outstanding
you?
Outstanding, batting 1,000.
I'm glad
Not
to hear.
30%, 1,000.
I'm glad to hear batting, because I am already glad that football season's over.
And season gone, pentagon, octagon, season gone.
Season gone, that's it, that's it. We are grateful. You know, I did that little, I did like
My
this.
My Bulls had to get on them. So, you know, I was faculty there for
I did
a
one
while,
of them,
you know,
I did
so
one of them,
I can say that.
I did one of them samples. You do like a 3-day sample of Hulu Plus to watch the Gator game. You know how fast I got back in there and canceled that?
Canceled.
By the third quarter, I was like, okay, let me cancel that.
You saw how that was going to end. I did. I said, here's how God's going to work this one out for him, you know, right up to the end.
And happy trails, Billy Napier.
Yeah. There you go.
Automatica Grammatica.
There you go. There you go.
The doom, yeah.
Oh, man. Well, hey, let's move on to better subjects.
We have
an incredible guest with us today.
Incredible.
And I tell you, I could spend the entire podcast just on an introduction for our guest today. I had to condense it. I missed a lot of stuff. I apologize right now on all the accomplishments of this fine individual we have here today. But our guest today on the show is Michael Presley Bobbitt. He's an acclaimed off-Broadway playwright whose works like Sunset Village and Florida Man have brought fresh, quirky stories to the stage. So he's bringing us to the stage, Doug.
Absolutely.
And he's also, not only that, but he's a best-selling novelist with hits like Godspeed, Cedar Key, and a newer release now that's out, Forever Cedar Key, and I think there's another one coming. We're going to get into this. And it really captures the heart and hometown of the crown jewel of Levy County, Cedar Key, Florida.
The Tenderloin.
Yes. I
was going to say Otter Creek, but you know.
Yeah, right. I got a crown jewel. but Michael's talents don't stop, you know, right there with the page or the stage. He's also a clam farmer, a dedicated clam farmer down there in Cedar Key. Tending to the water.
Clam ambassador right here.
And official clam ambassador of Cedar Key.
Yeah.
I thought he would have a sash on today.
That's more than most people can say.
Yeah. But he is definitely an ambassador for that hidden gem of Cedar Key, promoting culture, cuisine, coastal magic. He's a weatherman of sorts as well.
Yes, he's
been reporting almost daily on the on Cedar Key.
Just
an absolute pleasure, Michael, and we're so grateful to have you with us. Welcome to the Palm and Pine Podcast.
Gentlemen, thank you for having me. And this, I've done a lot of podcasts and a lot of interviews, but for those of you that don't know, we're at a hunting cabin out in the middle of what looks like 1,000 acres of longleaf pine.
It's good they don't know.
It's so quiet out here. We're doing this thing on a porch, and there's a dog sitting in front of me. This is the greatest podcast on planet Earth.
Well, just only one dog. So, I mean, you know, we're not the best prepared, but we do have a dog. But, we are isolated. That's the way we like it. Doing a lot of longleaf pine. We're actually doing a pretty major longleaf pine restoration project.
Oh, fantastic.
Let me translate all that. It's below 75 degrees this morning.
Yeah, we're in a good mood.
It's chilly out here. Yeah.
Douglas even got a little bit of a cold. You'll hear it in his voice.
Change of season.
It's a frigid 74 and a half.
Yeah, that's right.
That's why everybody's all happy.
Yeah. Hey, to kick us off, Michael, why don't you just kind of give us, just tell us a little bit about your background and,
sure.
and you know, where you grew up. Just kind of bring us up to date with, you know, where you grew up and how you got to Cedar Key.
Sure. So I grew up in Polk County. Sheriff Grady Judd down there. We'll shoot you dead, Grady Judd. But I grew up down there. My family's been in Florida since before it was a state. Hard scrabble family. We've picked some oranges. We've worked in the phosphate mines. My mama was a foreman out there at the phosphate mines for a long time. Went to college, did my undergrad at Florida Southern there in Lakeland. And after the Navy, I found my way up to Gainesville. Some of my buddies were in college there, and I went to go visit one weekend. And then I just never left this part of the state. I lived there for 22 years. But always on what I call the Cedar Key side of Gainesville. I always wanted to be where I could get to the islands quick. I got my pilot's license about 22 years ago, and we would fly into the little runway there in Cedar Key. Shortest public runway in Florida. And the first time I saw the little island, I said, I'm going to live here.
Huh.
It took me three ex-wives and 20 years, but now I'm here to stay.
Well, that's awesome. You know, I've flown into Cedar Key. I'm a pilot, and I've flown into Cedar Key many times. And so have you ever had anything other than a crosswind landing there?
Oh, my gosh. It's like they went out and said, let's put this thing to make it as hard as possible.
let's put water on both ends.
It's always hard, right rudder, and I'm doing a slip right down to the end.
Yeah, exactly.
You can see why. I mean, about once every 18 months, we have to go fish somebody out of the Gulf there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Especially on a good clear day, the water and the horizon blend together.
Yeah.
And so the non-IFR pilots, they lose the horizon and they think they're crashing, and they pull up and up and up and they stall it and dump it out there.
Yeah, I tell you, if you're over that little area there, it pays to be instrument rated. Two places in my life I've found that, and they would be Western Kansas or Saskatchewan. And that area, there's nothing there. There's nothing in Western Kansas. There's nothing over that water. And it does get confusing very, very quickly. Well, so how long have you been living there then?
So I've been living there full time, a little over 5 years.
Okay.
And it's been the five greatest years of my life. I showed up there with my tail between my legs. My wife had left me unexpectedly. And I just drove out there on a Tuesday one day to try to get some clarity, and found a 140-year-old house that was falling into the Gulf. And I made an offer on it that day. And I spent the next 2 years renovating it, bringing it back to its former glory, and I've never felt more connected to a place or more at home than I did in Cedar Key. They took me in. I met the Davis family there at the time. Heath Davis was our longtime mayor, youngest mayor in the history of Florida. He was mayor forever, and he and I became fast buddies. We were both going through a divorce, and that family really took me in, and I've found the place where I'm going to be.
Mm-hmm.
When I was reporting from all those hurricanes, I was on the BBC one day, and this British news lady was incredulous, like, how can you keep living there? What will you do if another hurricane comes? And I said, I live under the number 4 bridge in a tent if I have to. This is where I'm meant to be.
Yeah.
It's really a special place.
It is a special place for all of us, and I can remember, Doug and I both can remember as kids, I can remember driving, of course, I was just in the car, I wasn't driving, across the old number 4 bridge. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was very rickety, and it was even scary, you know, at that time. And I think they were maybe building the other bridge. That probably tells you how old I am. But it's always been a unique place. But one of the things about Cedar Key has been just constant change, the story of Florida.
So that's, you bring up a great point. You know, and the people that love Cedar Key, we fight like hell every day to try to keep it the way it is.
Right.
But the running joke about Cedar Key is there's never been a more constantly changing place ever.
That's
right. We were a timber place until we cut down all the cedar trees and didn't replant them. We were a mullet catching place until the government disastrously banned the nets.
Else they wanted to bring in on the boats.
You better believe it. It's a place that's as constantly changing as the weather. But the soul of the place has really found a way to dig in and hang on.
Yeah, some good restaurants down there.
Oh, yeah.
I would say, if I could say one continuity, mm-hmm. it has been what you just touched on, the soul of the people.
You better believe
No matter what happens, mm-hmm. they've got character. They stick together. They're cohesive. I had some experience down there. I was at one time the biologist on Cedar Keys Refuge mm-hmm. and Lower Suwannee. So I worked down there for a span of 3 to 5 years, I guess it was, in the early 2000s. So I worked with illustrious characters mm-hmm. such as Kenny McCain.
Oh, you may... the whole McCain family.
Yeah, the
That's
McCains.
The outlaws you want to be.
Yeah. You know, so I was immersed in that culture for several years. And one thing that was always in the back of my head, and I want you to elaborate on this whole thing we're talking about, you know, there would always a threat of storms.
Yep.
There was always socioeconomic threats. Mm-hmm. There was always people moving in, right, and buying out people, right? You know, coming in with money, buying out locals. Right. All these threats. But one thread that was always in my head, and I think I got this from working with Kenny McCain, is no matter what those threats were, I never worried about those mm-hmm. people. I said, you know what, that's the last people. Like, we got to worry about a lot of folks if something goes wrong. We're going to have to help them.
Yep.
We're going to have to, you know, do this or that. But I ain't worried about Kenny McCain.
No, I don't either.
So elaborate on that. I mean, I think that's what we're trying to get at.
You make a great point. So when you live in that close to the Gulf of Mexico, and I describe in, I think, my first book, I call the Gulf of Mexico the great provider and the angry God. I mean, it gives and it gives and it gives, but sometimes it comes to take and it comes to exact a toll. And if you want to live in Cedar Key long term, you have to be okay with that. I say all the time, you have to really want it to live in Cedar Key. Mm-hmm. When Helene devastated the island last year, I made a video in the immediate aftermath, and I was just overcome with emotion because the town was, you know, so torn apart. And I said, and I got some grief from this from people. I said, just a throwaway line. I said, we're about to find out who really loves Cedar Key,
right?
Because you have to fight to stay in mm-hmm. a place like that. And that really is, we have the distinction of being the only coastal community in Florida where tourism is not our primary economic engine.
Wow.
We are a blue-collar working waterfront place. And I mm-hmm. think the blue-collar soul of the place, that hard scrabble group of people that just love it so much, they're willing to fight through the storms and the hurricanes, the constantly changing economics. In a place like Cedar Key, as soon as there's economic turbulence in the world, places that are, you know, largely geared toward recreation and tourism
right.
and fishing and clams, those are the first to feel the economic pinch.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. You make a great point about the place. It really is the guts and soul of the place are the hard scrabble blue collar folks that live there, and it's a great place to be.
I think that's a great point. I think that blue collar element, that blue collar philosophy, is what drives that community, and it's truly the characterization of it. And again, like you say, everything could go, you know, three-eyed Atlas, it could pop around the sun in December and things can go to hell.
Yes.
But again, I'm not worried about Cedar Key.
That's right.
And I'm not worried about the people of Cedar Key.
Take a beating and keep on ticking.
That's right.
So you have several novels that you've written recently. We're going to show the viewers these here. And, of course, they're based on Cedar Key, and so that inspired you to write these. Tell us a little bit about how you decided, hey, I'm going to write a novel and maybe a series of mm-hmm. novels based upon a possible experience,
mm-hmm.
A serious experience, a serious hardship that the people in Cedar Key might face. So tell us about these novels.
So this is a great lead-in talking into the resiliency that's required to live in a place like Cedar Key. There's a running joke amongst people that are fans of my writing that I only ever really write about one thing. I write about the power of the extended families we make for ourselves mm-hmm. as a defense against the terrible modern world.
Right.
And really the power of community has saved me. Like mm-hmm. when I showed up in Cedar Key with my tail between my legs, Cedar Key took me in at my lowest point in my life and held me up. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to conceive of a way to tell a story that would really crystallize this sense of community. So these, My Godspeed, Cedar Key, and Forever Cedar Key, and the soon-to-be third in the trilogy, The Last Great Stand of Cedar Key, which will be out in March or early April, these all follow the island in the immediate aftermath of a global nuclear holocaust. So, I mean, I couldn't think of a better crucible to put these characters in mm-hmm. and to turn up the heat and to see what they do, how they react. And the characters react like the islanders react. They circle the wagons around one another, and they look after each other. I like to say on the island that even the we even love the people we don't like there.
That's right.
Yep. When there's a big storm kicking up out in the Gulf, it doesn't matter.
That's right.
Whatever little petty small town feuds have been brewing throughout the year, you know, we go out and help one another.
Well,
so that's the general premise of the books.
I tell you, I thoroughly enjoy these books. The first one is the Godspeed Cedar Key. What I love the most growing up here. You know, I feel like Cedar Key's a part of me, mm-hmm. and I know the people I've worked down there. And you use pseudonyms to an extent. Now they weren't the most clever pseudonyms. They were pretty close, but yeah. I knew I didn't have to go more than about four pages into the mm-hmm. book to find one of my old girlfriends.
Oh, yeah.
and all the other characters. That's one of the things I enjoyed is I recognized so many of them. Yeah. You know, I went to high school with the police chief, mm-hmm. and I worked yeah. With the McCains and a lot of those other folks down there. And where did you, like for me, and I think for a lot of people, I wouldn't have come up with the idea. I know these are hardy people.
Mm-hmm.
I know they'll come together, but I wouldn't have thought of that. Yeah. How did that come to you? Like, hey, I know what, I'm going to make a fictional story about real people and yeah. a real place.
Well, I just wanted to be able to tell this story about these people. And you're right. One of the main characters in the book, Hayes David, sounds an awful lot like Heath Davis.
Right.
And I think one of your old girlfriends, Stephanie May,
yep.
In the book, I describe her as comfortable in a mink coat with a martini as she is in a bikini with a box of cheap wines.
Well, hey, you nailed it.
That's her.
Right.
And if you're in a fight, you want Stephanie May on your side.
Damn straight.
Do you ever get grief from these people for being mentioned in your books?
Oh,
I didn't want to be mentioned.
So almost everyone has. And when I first moved to town, I was coming off some pretty big successes. I had two plays premiere off Broadway in New York in two successive years. So that was a little bit of a fanfare when I showed up to town. The Levy County paper did a full page story about me moving in. And
right.
So people knew I was there and they had heard I was writing a book, and I would write on my front porch a lot. They would come by and say, hey, am I in the book? Have you killed me yet? Did I make it?
Right.
So
some you had to include.
Oh, yeah.
Do you use an old
mechanical
typewriter?
No. So well, most people love it. Now, I did go after a few folks, I thought in a good natured way. For instance, I described one of our city commissioners as a bad haircut masquerading as a full human being, and he did not think that was funny at all. Another one of my commissioners I described as a blank page of a woman who asked obvious rudimentary questions as a way of appearing in the public record, and she thought it was hysterical. She came up to me with the book and had me sign it. I mean, so yeah, it's been a wild trip that they've all been able to be with me on. So
yeah, I guess any publicity is good publicity.
Man, I'll take it.
Well, you mentioned your plays. You showed up as a playwright mm-hmm. to Cedar Key. Let's shift gears a little bit. We'll come back to the books, the novels. Again, there's just so much to talk about. Were you a playwright before you were a novelist, and what sparked that interest in you?
So I was always hung around the theater a little bit in high school and college because that's where the girls who wanted to make bad decisions with me.
I should have been a playwright.
So if you're a straight guy in the theater, you got the run of the place.
You're the only straight man in there. So.
I was married and I had a marriage that wasn't going very well, and I wanted it to go well. So
sure.
I wrote a play to impress a girl. I was trying to impress that lady. And it did convince her to marry me, but it didn't help the marriage work out as well as I wanted it to. But,
right.
But I wrote a play to impress a girl, and 18 months later, I was in the New York Times. I mean, it just went totally bananas. And the first play that I really got a little bit famous for, I wrote a play called Sunset Village.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the underground drug and sex culture at the Villages.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go. plenty of ammo there to write a play about.
I went down there for a couple of months every weekend to just try to see what I could get into down there. I got into a hot tub naked with five old ladies.
Doesn't take you long.
And so, I mean, what happens in the Villages is supposed to stay in the Villages, but I told the story, and that play went bananas. If you've never been rolling your face off on Molly at a line dance party in the Villages, you are not living.
Oh, my gosh. Well, hey,
I'm not living.
Let me tell you my only Villages experience, and this is much tamer than that. But I was a biologist for the state Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission. Mm-hmm. And so we had to go on all these nuisance calls, right? Mm-hmm. Well, I ended up going on a bear call, which was very common to go on, you know, somebody having a bear tear the garbage up, whatever. And it was kind of on the outskirts, you know, in the villages right there. And I go, and sure enough, here's this woman like you describe, yep. right? Uh-huh. And uh-huh. I had, you know, it's basically an educational thing. You tell them, okay, you don't leave a birthday cake outside on the picnic table, yeah. you know, at night. You know, yeah. you kind of have to educate them. This yeah. is, you know, how to live with bears. And, of course, none of them know anything about bears, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just a dog, you know, that they thought was a bear, you know, or uh-huh. whatever. Uh-huh. Anyway, I do my due diligence, give the lady the good word, and then I'm on my way. Well, next morning, another call, another bear problem. I get back this time, and there's six ladies.
you were on the menu. You were the bear.
I was, right. So, yeah, I'm a little slow to catch on sometimes, but I called I called dispatch, and I'm like, we got to come up with a different, maybe send them a YouTube that's video fantastic. Or something. But
how you ended that, you send no gal out.
Yeah, send a girl to them. Yeah.
So there that is, ended there's it. A phenomenon that happens there. There are about six women for every man, because, you know,
kind of like being a playwright.
No, that's right.
Yeah, right
you were used to that.
That's right, because men are idiots. We die a lot sooner.
Right.
So a place like that caters to the retiree set, they end up just naturally the demographics of the place, there aren't a lot of men.
Yeah.
So these men who have been, you know, just twerps their whole life, terrible with women, they show up at the villages and they're suddenly possessed with all this sexual power they've never had before.
Right.
And they're out there wielding it everywhere they can. I mean, there are literal old ladies knife fighting each other in the street over some bald, broke down old man in the public parking lot.
Oh,
that's
like,
a real story.
It's like being in the Philippines.
Oh, yeah. Man. So that story really, really resonated. And if I had just written a wild play about the antics, it wouldn't have went anywhere. But there was a deep underlying story about finding community even at the worst point of your life.
So
that play has really just took off. I go somewhere every year. I fly somewhere for a red carpet premiere of that play.
That's excellent.
Well, if you want to take the Palm and Pine podcast with you, we can travel. Well, that is awesome.
And so right after that, I wrote a play called Florida Man, right at the height of the Florida Man hysteria, where every news story, you know, a Florida man throws an alligator in a Wendy's drive-thru. And so I wrote a play about a guy who digs up his dead father to give him the proper Viking funeral he always wanted.
Okay.
It takes place in the...
That is Florida Man.
In the Polk County swamp culture along the Peace River there.
There you go.
And that thing just went bananas.
Oh, wow.
And in that play, I cooked up some guerrilla marketing. So in that play, our main character is trying to convince his long-suffering girlfriend that he's matured enough to marry him, and he does that by building her a homemade sex robot. So I've got to get to New York City with this sex robot that I had built in my garage so they could use it in the play. And I decided that if I could get the TSA to confiscate my bag, I know that they have a blog where they put up the weirdest stuff.
Oh, yeah. Doug and I read it all the time.
So I wrote a little note to the TSA agent and said, you're going to want to check this bag. There's some weird shit in there.
Ooh.
And they found my bag with 15 dildos, a homemade sex machine, a ghillie suit, fake guns, all kind of stuff for the play.
Sir, are you headed to the villages?
Before I landed in New York City, there were reporters calling me want to talk about the post that the TSA had made. 8 million people saw the story about my homemade sex machine, and we had sold out the production.
Oh,
before
well, you know a little bit about promotion.
Yeah.
Wow.
Doug, we'll have to get back in the shop this afternoon and build up something.
You know a little bit about promotion. Well, I hear you know a little bit about houseboats, too.
Oh,
that's what I hear.
Yeah. Tell us about your houseboat.
So I got a houseboat. It was built in 1968. These fellas had been using it for a crystal meth lab.
Of course.
Enterprising young entrepreneurs. And their enterprise turned sour when the boat caught on fire and blew up.
So
I was able to buy this burned out old hull for $1,000, and I spent 2 years renovating this thing. It is a palace inside now. It's bedrooms and bathrooms.
Wow.
And I live right in the middle of town there in Cedar Key. And if you go buy any of my books in any of the stores, they'll tell you where I live. So people come to the house all day long for me to sign the books, and I love it. I love it. But when I need to get away and write, I disappear on the houseboat.
There you go.
And so I've written all these books on the houseboat.
So you have like propane and you have everything you need like on the houseboat
to
cook.
Yeah, so I have it docked at my clam nursery dock there. So I've got water and power and sewer, the whole bit.
How far have you gone out from Cedar Key?
We don't go a bunch, but whenever there's a hurricane, the idea is to run it up into the river and tie it up at
Okay, so you have gone down to Swanee and come up in the river?
Yeah. But mainly it's just a place for me to get away and...
Like an office.
Yeah, it's great. Oh, okay, or whenever great. There's a big wow. storm, me and the lady friend will go down there and have a little romance time.
It's good. Wow, that's great. Now, could you live on a boat
there? I think technically in Cedar Key, we have a provision where you're only supposed to stay on it 14 days out of any mm-hmm. calendar month. But I think that'd be a real easy rule to break.
Two weeks a month. That's a lot.
Well, you'd have to have a neighbor that turned you in. kind of like in the book. You always got that one.
Well, even in a place like Cedar Key, we have those. William Faulkner famously said something along the lines of, in a small town, we have less opportunity for actual evil, so we have to invent it in the personage of our neighbors.
Yes, inventors of evil things. That's right.
But I really do just use it mostly to write my books and stuff.
Right.
It's pretty cool.
Well, and you're a clam farmer. Mm-hmm. Now, I've got a good buddy that I grew up with. Mm-hmm. We were kind of running buddies back in the Stephanie May days.
Yep.
And let me see if I can come up with a pseudonym for him. Lank Tumman.
Okay.
Double Threat Seafood.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I was talking to him recently, and he told me, he said, Clamming pretty well got destroyed with Helene. And he's like, I don't know if it'll ever be what it was. Is it really that bad?
Well, I don't share his doom and gloom about it. We did lose about 80% of the crop industry-wide. We took it on the chin.
Wow.
And the problem with that is that, it takes 16 months to grow a clam from baby to market size. So if you lose 80% of your crop, it's 16 months before you can make any more money. And that's hard enough on the individual farmers, but we really battled losing market share. So you can't call up Publix or...
And just tell them, hold off for 6 months. Right.
So some of our larger wholesalers were literally having to buy clams from other southern states and sell them at a loss for a year to just hold on to the market share. But we've done that. We've tightened our belts. It's been a rough year. But so far this year, the conditions have been great. The water temperature is a little cooler.
Mm-hmm.
My nursery clams that I'm pulling out to transplant into the big grow out bags, they mm-hmm. look absolutely beautiful.
Great.
So I think the industry is strong. We've lost about a third of our clam farmers are just gone for good.
Okay.
Because if you're a small mom and pop person with a single boat and you can't go 16 months without a paycheck. No. You got to go get a job.
So when you put them out to grow, you put them out somewhere. We're landlubbers. We don't know about this kind of farming. You put them out somewhere, and they're yours. They're in your container, it's an area where boats will not go.
Well, it's a neat system. We lease 2 acre submerged land leases from the state.
I'll be doggone. Okay.
Some of the bigger farmers might have as many as 20 of them.
Okay.
And on one of these 2 acre leases, you can pretty comfortably grow 3 million clams with no trouble. Mm-hmm. And so we lease those from the state.
And they're like in little cages that keep them?
Bags.
Bags, so okay.
A 4-foot by 4-foot nylon mesh bag.
Okay.
And it starts out, we put 12,000 of these tiny little clams about the size of the end of your fingernail. And we'll put them in those bags with little tiny holes for about 3 months.
Okay.
Then we'll pull them out. We'll break them down into the same size bag with bigger holes. And we'll put about 1,200 in there.
Okay.
So about 10 times the amount of bags. And then they'll stay out there for about a year, and you don't do anything. You just pull them up a year later and
now, you have trouble with people stealing your clams? Is that an issue?
So, not really. Now and again, you'll hear a little rumor flare up and then go away. There was a famous story.
Is that a hanging crime down there?
Story in the late 90s about a guy that was brazenly stealing clams. And is no longer findable on planet Earth.
Uh-oh. Yeah. Well, sometimes people disappear. He may be on a long vacation.
He might be somewhere in a swamp.
So then you harvest them. Do you guys have to shuck them down there manually?
No. In Florida, if you're just a farmer like I am, not a wholesaler, we're required to sell our clams that day to a licensed wholesaler.
Oh, okay.
And it creates a chain of custody.
That's great.
Because it's a food product.
That's great.
And we have about 6 wholesalers right there on the island. So most of us who are just farmers, when we pull up, let's say we pull up $4,000 worth of clams one day on the boat.
Okay.
We take it across the island. We sell it right there. We dump them into a big tumbler.
Okay.
It's tumbled up through there, and you're done. You collect the check.
Mm-hmm. So they do the shelling and put them in tubs or whatever?
No real shelling. We're a live product industry. So the clams get put into cool rooms.
Oh, okay.
And that day or the next day, they're on a truck somewhere around the country.
Oh, wow. All right.
So
if you go to any Publix
all around the state, my friends of Davis families grow all of those clams. You can you can go to Publix today and pick out a clam that Heath Davis had his hands on. And I think that is such a cool
thing. That is very cool.
And because of the way they track it, if there ever was a problem or we had someone get sick, you can can track it right back to the actual farmer.
Right, and find out
where it came from, so we can go test it.
Right, and you keep a few locally there for the restaurants, right?
Oh, yummy, yummy. Remarkably local system. And the great thing about clams are, not only are they one of the most nutrient-dense foods on Earth and delicious,
yes,
good for the environment.
Yes, they clean
the water.
They're filtering the
water.
Well,
how are the oysters doing in Cedar Key this year?
So we, so the wild-caught oysters are doing pretty good.
Okay.
And we have a handful of folks, Heath Davis being one of them, that are growing farm-raised oysters in Cedar Key now. They grow them in cages that float in the water column. So our clam bags are on the bottom, and above those you can grow oyster cages in the water column.
So are they propagated in a nursery kind of similar?
Same kind of thing, yeah.
Wow. And they take about 16 months?
I'm ignorant about oysters. I'd hate to tell you the wrong numbers.
Right.
I tell you, if you want to see the production of this, Douglas, I need to take you in the airplane. Because you can't, you don't get the feel for it just looking across the water.
Right, you fly over it,
and it'll blow your mind.
It's amazing.
It will.
We have over 1,000 acres currently being farmed.
The number of bags, I mean, that
is outstanding.
Yeah, it looks like a Kansas cornfield.
So you have a lot going on. You're writing novels. You're writing plays. And you have the clam farm, and you're the clambassador.
I am the clambassador. I started a little thing to try to market the clams. I put on this silly Prussian military officer's uniform and sewed some clams on the lapel. I got a big clam hat. And the next thing you know, I'm lobbying Congress as the clambassador.
Wow.
And so my buddies and I, my buddies have a movie studio in Gainesville. We made a film called Rise of the Clambassador.
Uh-huh.
It was supposed to be a little 8-minute industry film. And it ended up being such a fantastic production. We entered it into film festivals around the world.
Right,
we immediately won the International Ocean Film Festival, the Paris Short Film Festival.
See what you get on the Palm and Pine podcast,
you tune in,
and we got the Clambassador here.
It's available for free. You can watch it on Vimeo or YouTube, Rise of the Clambassador.
Oh,
it's an 8-minute cinematic masterpiece.
Wow.
All about my friendship with Heath Davis and about this community. And we got $50,000 drone shots.
Wow.
And it's unbelievable.
Check it out.
I flew out there to San Francisco with my crazy outfit on. I show up at this thing, and they said, "We knew the clambassador when you walked in the door."
They said there was
not even a close second place. When you run an international ocean film festival with like 4,000 entrants, 3,999 of them are about the ocean's dying.
Right.
The seals
climate
are
change.
Dying.
Oh,
everything's terrible.
Water levels rising.
And then you next show up with this joyful film about a bunch of hillbillies growing clams in the Wild West out there. I mean,
bunch of Florida crackers. That is awesome. That is amazing.
That is awesome.
Yeah. I tell you what I want to have happen. If you could use your powers as clambassador,
my immense power.
Yes, I want that. I want that uniform you just described to be the daily wear of Edwin Jenkins,
chief.
The police chief, and until he stops ragging on us poor Gators.
That guy is the worst embodiment of a Miami Hurricane.
Oh my gosh!
How did that happen?
The most obnoxious, terrible.
Oh, I got it pictured. I got it pictured.
Chief Edward Jenkins. I wrote a scene in my first book about him. My girlfriend at the time had bought me, well, she's still my girlfriend. She'll be my lady forever because she's wonderful. But she bought me this Western lawman jacket that I thought I looked so cool. So I walk into the Jiffy store, and I'm feeling like a lawman.
You got your duster on.
And I see the chief there, and I go to grab a banana, and I'm going to quick draw on him like a Brian White.
Don't do that to Edwin.
That joker, before I could get my hand on the banana, he had pulled the double sixers. Bam, you're dead.
Yeah.
You try to draw on the man.
Trying to draw on Edwin. You know, I grew up with Edwin, and I'm going to tell you, if there's anybody that should be police chief.
Yeah.
From the time he was a youngster, he was made to be a police officer. He's a fine,
was
a fine young man. I was privileged to grow up with him, and I'm so grateful that Cedar Key has him.
A lot of grief, but I have never met a finer public servant.
Great.
So you have a new novel coming out. You have anything else new coming out you want to talk about?
Well, I got a new novel coming out May, June. It'll be the final in the trilogy called The Last Great Stand of Cedar Key. It picks up 25 years after the second novel.
Wow.
So all the heroes from the first two books are now old men in the twilight of their lives, and we get to see a whole lifetime play out. And then shortly after that, I'm working on a novel called Trailer
Park Elegy. In the twilight of their lives when they're Whomper Stompers.
That's right. And so then the following year, I'll have a novel called Trailer Park Elegy coming out based on one of my plays. And my goal is to write a novel a year, every year, until I'm too old and stupid to do it anymore.
Okay, that's great.
Such a fantastic hit all over the country.
To be able to reach tens of thousands of people with a story about
the South. Yeah. Everything I write about is steeped in the lore of Southern culture. That seems like a thing worth doing for the rest of your life.
Well, I tell you, I loved reading the novel, and I was traveling. I've been, you know, like you, I've been traveling for the last 10 or 12 days. I was out west, so I had to get the audio version.
I do all the audiobooks.
I was pleasantly surprised, read by the author.
I do 37 different voices in that book.
I'd never listened to an audiobook where he changed his voice and became the character of, he does a pretty good Edwin Jenkins.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
That's him. And through the whole book, and also you sang at least three songs, if I recall, in that novel as well.
We do a little singing around here, but you know, I have a cold right now, but I might have one in me.
What do you got? If you're interested.
Yeah. It goes kind of like this. We are the boys of old Florida. F-L-O-R-I-D-A. Where the girls are the squarest and the boys are the squarest.
Any old state down our way.
Hey! We are all strong for old Florida. Down where the old Gators play.
Go Gators!
In all kinds of weather, we'll all stick together. For F-L-O-R-I-D-A.
Go Gators! All right. We still love our Gators. Well, we love our Gators.
Had a strong finish there.
We sounded like we were drunk at the game. You know, at the game, they got the words. They got the words.
Well, we love to present a free gift to anybody that appears in person on the podcast. Y'all out there appear in person, and you get something, and it's a half a pint of our Barlow & Sons pure cane syrup we make here on the farm.
Amazing.
And you can have that. And I think we want to get you to sign
some of your books.
We're going to put them in a drawing sometime near Christmas.
They'll be in our drawing. So we'll have both books. And we're going to do the drawing at Christmas. We'll have both of those. We'll have you sign them. And while you're doing that, tell us how folks can find you. What's the best way to get to you all your work?
You can find me on my website, michaelpresleybobbitt.com, or follow me on Facebook or Instagram. I'm constantly making a fuss on there. Whenever there's heavy weather, I broadcast as the action weatherman for the Clam Ambassador News Network. So I'm always happy. Or just come by my house. I live at the corner of Ian.
You heard it here.
In Cedar Key. I don't lock the door. Come see me.
Wow, we have rarely had someone give their address.
Very rarely.
So I did that on an NPR one time. A million people listening. And I said, if you like the books, come down to Cedar Key. I'm at Ian Third. Come see me.
Yeah.
And my girl was like, have you lost your mind? You can tell a million people.
If I had Edwin Jenkins here working for me as my protection, I probably would give out my address.
We had an author that wrote about the history of organized crime in Florida, Scott. Ditchy, and he didn't want to give out his address.
A whole different deal there.
Yeah. Well, hey, Michael, a pleasure having you. We're so grateful.
Right.
Thank you. Thank you for communicating to the rest of the world the true nature of our county, our culture, and the people of Florida. We're forever grateful for that.
Oh, man. Thank you guys for having me. It's been the
awesome. We'll have to have you back, and we'll do another song.
I hear you have
some other songs in you.
Right. We'll rehearse next time. All right, folks. That's all for today. Keep it Florida. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode of the Palm and Pine Podcast. This podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only, and should not be considered professional advice. The views and opinions expressed by the host or any guest are our own and do not necessarily reflect the views of any affiliates. Our opinions are just that, opinions, and are not legal or medical advice. But in our opinion, avoid lawyers and big pharma at all cost. Copyright 2025, Palm and Pine Podcast, all rights reserved. Please subscribe and share. Okay, until next time, keep it Florida, and we'll see you soon.